a book review. The name of the book, God's Continent, Christianity, Islam, and Europe's Religious Crises. The author, Philip Jenkins. Philip Jenkins, by the way, did an enormous amount of writing on the sex abuse case. He is not a Catholic. He teaches at Penn State, and he is well known for his understanding of history and bringing history into play in contemporary issues. What is the book about? Well, on the jacket we read, "Is the Christian Church in Europe doomed to collapse under the weight of globalization, Western secularism, and a flood of Muslim immigrants?" Though many pundits are predicting just that, God's Continent reveals the flaws in their arguments and offers a much more measured assessment of Europe's religious future. While frankly acknowledging current tensions, Philip Jenkins shows, for instance, that the overheated rhetoric about a Muslim-dominated Europe is based on politically convenient myths, namely that Europe is being imperiled by floods of Muslim immigrants, exploding Muslim birth rates, and the demise of European Christianity. He points out that by no means are Muslims the only new immigrants in Europe. Christians from Africa and Asia are also pouring into Western countries and bringing with them a vibrant and enthusiastic faith that is helping to transform the faith of European Christianity. Jenkins argues that both Christianity and Islam face real difficulties in surviving within Europe's secular culture. But instead of fading away, both have adopted and are adapting. Yes, the churches are in decline, but there are also clear indications that Christian loyalty and devotion survive, even as institutions crumble. The third book in an acclaimed trilogy that includes The Next Christendom and The New Faces of Christianity, God's Continent offers a realistic and historically grounded appraisal of the future of Christianity in a rapidly changing Europe. And to get an idea of what exactly is in this book, let us now turn to the table of contents and see what they have to offer us. Chapter 1, Your Religion to Tomorrow. 2, Godless Europe? Question mark. 3, Faith Among the Ruins. 4, New Christians. 5, The Moors Return. 6, Making Muslims. 7, Young and Old. 8, Revolutions at Home. 9, Ultras. 10, Transforming Europe. 11, Transforming Faith. And 12, Europe's Religions Tomorrow. And now let's take a look at a little section in the book to see exactly what Jenkins is trying to set out to show us. I have chosen the very end of the book, page 287, and this gives us an idea of where this book has been in its chapters and what the final message is being left for us. The section I've chosen is called Changing Religions, and it reads as follows. But while legal and political issues could have their impact, the most significant developments promise to be in the specifically religious realm as changes in contemporary Europe affect members of different faith groups around the world. Muslims, of course, run the greatest risk in the short term and should benefit most in the longer perspective. For many Muslims, the encounter with Europe has produced a sudden and often shocking immersion in modernity and has, in addition, created a hothouse atmosphere of controversy and free speech. Though the resulting intellectual and spiritual turmoil contributes to political extremism, the long-term pressures are likely to create an ever more adaptable form of faith that can cope with social change without compromising basic beliefs. Whether or not we call it Euro Islam, such a development would be of immense benefit not just to European societies, but to neighboring regions of Africa and the Near East as well. The United States would gain immensely from a decline of religious tensions in these regions. However counterintuitive this may seem, the advent of Islam might also be good news for European Christianity in an era when those two words are beginning to sound increasingly like an oxymoron. As European states redefine their attitudes to one religion, they have no choice but to take account of the far more numerous presence of Christianity. From a grassroots level, too, the immense attention paid to religious concerns and Europe's heritage in the past few years probably will drive more Europeans to take a renewed interest in their Christian roots, to rediscover what it is that so many academic experts seem to be consigning to oblivion. As mainstream Europeans rethink the religious roots of their society, some at least will be led to take that religious dimension more seriously. We know that a broad interest in religion and Christian spirituality survives in Europe, while more focused movements are cultivating new forms of devotion and instruction intended for contemporary societies. It would take a bold prophet to speak of a widespread Christian revival in near future Europe, but we can see surprising portents of recovery, however localized. As I read this, I could not but think of the new movements that are taking place in Europe, one of them being the San Egidio movement. We have that on our website. It would be well worth going to, and if you don't know anything about it, taking a look at it. They're doing magnificent work. It's a driven by the laity, but doing extremely wonderful church-inspiring work. Contrary to expectation, then, Christianity is surviving amid European secularism and often achieving far more than mere survival. That fact has potent implications for other parts of the world facing secularization in the future, not least perhaps in areas of the United States. The changes have a special impact for Roman Catholics, who continue to represent the world's largest single religious institution. European Catholics face severe challenges to their traditional position and must adapt to a world of falling vocations and declining clerical prestige, of a new minority status, even in countries familiarly regarded as quintessential Catholic, while church-state tensions grow. Each issue poses real problems which demand a rethinking of the nature of the church loyalties, the relationship between religion and national identity, and the proper role for the laity. If the European church can adapt successfully to the role of creative minority that augurs well for the fate of churches facing similar problems elsewhere. If the Catholic Church can survive contemporary Europe, it can survive anything. The Church's strong European roots means that tactics and movements that originate here are likely to spread to other parts of the world, so that as in earlier centuries, European Catholicism provides a creative laboratory of faith. The opportunities to interact with Islam give lessons learned in Europe still wider applicability. And the presence of so many Christian immigrants makes it all the more probable that solutions devised in Europe will spread around the world. Indeed, the recent despair over the fate of God's continent finds a good many historical precedents. Viewed over the centuries, perhaps the best indicator that Christianity is about to expand or revive is a widespread conviction that the religion is doomed or in its closing days. Arguably, the worst single moment in the history of West European Christianity occurred around 1798, with the Catholic Church under severe persecution in much of Europe, and skeptical, deist, and Unitarian movements in the ascendant across the Atlantic world. Among other horrors, that was the year that French revolutionary armies seized Pope Pius VI and carried him into exile, an event that many took to mark the end of the papacy and, yet again, the terminal crisis of the Catholic Church. That particular trough in Christian affairs also turned into an excellent foundation from which various groups built the great missionary movement of the 19th century, the Second Evangelical Revival, and the Catholic Devotional Revolution. Nothing drives activists and reformers more powerfully than the sense that their faith is about to perish in their homelands, and that they are urgently needed to make up these losses, whether overseas or among the previously neglected lost sheep at home. Quite possibly, the current sense of doom surrounding European Christianity will drive a comparable movement in the near future. Death and resurrection are not just fundamental doctrines of Christianity. They represent a historical model of the religion's structure and development. And I don't think we could end on a more positive note. As we end it there, one cannot but think of the Hegelian way of looking at history, in which you have everything coming together beautifully, then you have an antithesis, and then you have a synthesis. You have everything coming together well, then you have conflict, and out of conflict comes a new world. And that is really part of history. And so, as bad, as dire as it looks about Europe, and the ideas of secularism and the profane, and all of the other isms that are threatening the church, the hope is that history will repeat itself, and that we will see a new church. It was good to hear Jenkins talk about the laity and their new role now. And the fact that we have fewer priests seems to be so catastrophic. And yet, it may be a movement that is moving us into a new and more vibrant church. Amen.